My name is Richard Lamparsky, and I'm sitting on a nice deep couch in deep in Pacific Palisades overlooking the Pacific Ocean. And, I'm so comfortable. I hate asking questions. You in the mood to talk a lot, Billy Hallop?
Well, certainly. One of the best things I do, I think.
You are the third of the original Dead End Kids. I guess eventually I'll get around to all of them. I saw Leo Gorcey about 3 months ago when he was in New York, and I've known Hunts Hall now for about 3 or 4 years. And who else do I have to... One's dead, Bobby Jordan.
Bobby Jordan died, yes.
Yeah.
And Gabe Dell, he's just back from 2 weeks in Connecticut doing a play with Elaine May.
I saw Gabe Dell. Hunts Hall and I went to see Gabe Dell in a play he did for Carl Reiner in January. It was a big flop, but I'll tell you, I liked it very much.
He was great in it.
Well, you saw it.
No. I read all the notices. And I was with him before he went back east. He had gone back to Milwaukee to do, it was a pajama game with Guys and Dolls with Maggie Whiting. And while he was back there, he got the call to come into New York, and he asked me, I was at his house, and he asked me what I thought. And I said, well, you don't have to audition for anybody now. Your name is great. Your talent is there. Either they want you or they don't want you. He said, well, I think I will. And he did, and he didn't hear anything for a while. And he wasn't too pleased with the book, as it were, with the play. But he thought, well, Carl Reiner and Broadway again. And he did it. And believe it or not, he's kind of... really dejected about it. He's sorry he did it, in a way.
I don't know why he is, because he got the biggest hand. He was the best thing in it, by far. He had the best part, and he really milked it.
Well, Gabe's a perfectionist. And he just didn't think that he did. He gave his all. And I shouldn't be telling things out of school, but he and the other lead didn't get along too well.
I didn't know that. We talked with him for a little bit afterward. I was going to say we had a drink, but we didn't, because neither he nor Hans drink anymore.
No.
And I don't at all. So we talked on the street, as a matter of fact, for a little bit earlier. Tell me how you got, I know how the other two got into Dead End. Was that your first professional engagement?
Oh, no. I started radio when I was 6 years old, 1926.
Wait, weren't you Billy...
Bobby Benson.
Bobby Benson of the B-Bar-B?
H-Bar-O. Yes. Yeah, actually my training is out of radio. And then from radio, I went to the theater, and from the theater to pictures. And I've been in everything but burlesque. I was with Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus. I played the rodeos in New York with Bobby Benson. And during the war, I toured all through Europe in Golden Boy. And what a cast we had there. Joe Pevney was our director.
He's married to Mitzi Green.
Yeah. Arthur Penn, who's quite a director now, was our stage manager. Alex Nichol had a bit in the third act, and he was the assistant stage manager. Constance Darling was my leading lady. And we go from there.
That's a very interesting... I did know about Bobby Benson. I don't know what made me ask you about your first... because Hans and I discussed that, I think, on the air, as a matter of fact, when I knew it from reading books on radio. Do you see any of them? I know you see Gabe Dell.
Just Gabe and I see each other quite often. The rest of us aren't too friendly.
Leo told me that. He said it was always amazing even to him. He said that the whole gang didn't get along as well as people, would assume they did.
Well, there was a misnomer, you see. First of all, one is try to capitalize on the bit that we were all from the East Side and that we were picked up as East Side toughs, which is not true, because we'd all had previous experience. And one of the rather basic reasons that we didn't get along too well is I always made more money than they did. And this was a bone of contention. And my billing had to be bigger than the rest of the kids. But this was my agents doing, not mine. And, of course, I had more experience than they did.
I could see why that would be cause a little irritation.
And to this day... at my age, and I'm more than happy to tell you what it is, 48, and with the Dead End Picture still playing, I have a heck of a time. In fact, I hate the word Dead End.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not going to discuss it at length, because I think, we've gone into it sufficiently anyway on other programs, and your career is colorful enough, so we don't have to dwell on it. But do you watch them? Not just the Dead End Kids, but your other old television.
Well, I've got so many others that I made besides Dead End. I watch them once in a while, but maybe for nostalgic reasons, or to see whether I've improved as far as technique is concerned or honesty is concerned in performance. But not really. It's kind of boring, I think. Well, the only thing that is, to my estimation, great about the pictures that there was a social aspect to them. There was a message all the time. It just wasn't. We didn't make a picture because we made the picture to make money. There was a message, and today there aren't that many messages.
No, and actually, the same message would be applicable. The slums are still there.
A dead end today is as modern as it was in 1936.
Hell's Kitchen is just a little bit dirtier.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
It's changed, I imagine, to Puerto Rican instead of...
Yes, well, they always have a different minority group to trample on, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter. As long as you're poor, you can be black, white, or whatever you are. You're
indeed.
Treated the same way.
Indeed.
But you were in Hollywood and a star at a very glamorous time in the 1930s and 40s. And you were a perfect age. You were a young man, and you were the best-looking of the gang.
No.
Did you, were you very popular with the starlets and stars?
Not really, because I didn't exactly hang around with picture people. Coming from New York, coming from radio, this was all, it was kind of a facade, and it didn't ring true to me. We did have a group, and our group wasn't... like they are today, I don't think. We weren't as wild, really, as far as the newspapers were concerned, the columnists were concerned. Yes, we were wild. But it wasn't anything like it is today. I used to go up to Loretta Young's house most of the time. I was going with Loretta's sister, Georgiana, for some time. And we'd have swimming parties and maybe a case of beer, and that was it, you know. But most of the time we were working. We were working 12 to 14 hours a day and 6 days a week. So we didn't have the time, and... Well, 1 year, I was in three pictures at one time, shooting three at one time.
It was at Warner's?
Yes.
So you worked at Warner's?
Yeah, I worked at Warner's.
No, I say if you're under contract at Warner's, you work.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But I finally worked myself out of Warner's, though. And if you care, I have a wonderful story about Jack Warner.
Please.
When our option time came up, he was going to drop the other five kids and keep me. But I wanted my raise. And my agent said, well... Why don't you go up and ask him? So it wasn't a big raise, and I think it went from $1,000 a week to $1,250, which is a real small little raise.
Well, it impresses me.
But this was in 39. So I knocked on Mr. Warner's door, and I came in, and I said, Mr. Warner, I said, you know, I've been here for a year, and I know you want to keep me on a 40 out of 52, but I'd like my raise. And he looked at me, and he said, Billy, you want a raise. Think of the poor Jews in Germany, and you want to raise. I couldn't answer. I got raised right out of Warner's.
You went to Universal?
Yeah, I went to Universal and got my raise and a much better deal.
That we were talking about that before we began recording. What a nice, friendly lot that was.
It was a wonderful lot, but you worked. And you had to be a craftsman. You had to know your job. We didn't know from method acting or any of that type of thing. But having... gotten my training so early. With a great woman, by the way. I don't know if you've read about her. Maybe you have Nyla Mack.
Oh, Nyla Mack had Let's Pretend.
I did all that Let's Pretend.
And you and were you on with the Mock Twins?
Oh,
or
yes.
They were a little bit after you?
No, they came after us. They didn't do the show too often. Because they were over at NBC with Madge Tucker. But if anybody gave me the incentive, gave me the training, I owe it to Nyla.
You know, I still know Irene Wicker quite well, the singing lady who was on at the same time. And she told me that Nyla Mack, she said it was an amazing thing about this woman because she really wasn't wild about children.
No.
Everyone thought
no.
that she was,
oh, no.
she wasn't at
no.
all.
She treated us like as grown-ups, as professionals.
Yes.
If you couldn't cut the mustard, as it were, you didn't work next week. And all we got was $3.50 a show.
That's right, because it wasn't sponsored most of the time, was it?
No. When Cream of Wheat took it, then we started to get 60-something.
Yeah, I can still sing that song. You didn't have the song to sing, Cream of Wheat's so good to eat, and we have it every day.
No.
I can't prevail upon you.
If that was in the service, our station at Fort Monmouth on Saturdays, I'd come in and do the show. This was Saturday morning show, and I think I was 22, 23.
I may be seeing one of the Mock Twins while I'm here.
I saw them about... A month ago, we had a reunion out here of all the radio kids. Jimmy McCadden, Mark Twins.
Is Ezra Stone there?
No, as it was, he came in way later.
Talked to him last night.
And it was a reunion for Madge Tucker, who had Lady Next Door and a show on Saturday called Our Barn. That we used to do Let's Pretend in the morning at CBS and then run like mad over to NBC to do Our Barn in the afternoon. That meant a full $5.50 a day.
Is Madge Tucker here?
No, she left, went back. She's back in, I think she was up in Bronxville in New York.
Uh-huh. I must get her address from you, but I remember the lady next door.
I don't have her address. Jimmy might have. I don't know how to get in touch with her. But she hasn't changed, my gosh. She's still the same age.
Yeah, of course, Nyla Mack is dead.
Yes, yeah, she died. God bless her.
Very, very talented woman.
Oh. This was the woman who... she would never read lines for you. They had a thing many years ago where they would read lines for you, the director. And you became a puppet or a mimic, as it were. She would explain the situation and then say, okay, fine, do it.
You were very young. You must have been when you started.
Six.
Were those kids very competitive among each other?
Oh, God, yes, certainly we were. But it was a nice competition because there was a clique. And we did everything. There were four or five of us that did all the shows. March of Time, Niagara Hudson, 45 Minutes in Hollywood. In fact, on that, I used to do Mickey Rooney, and I did Dickie Moore. Those are my two that I played.
I see Dickie Moore all the time.
No.
You know what he's doing?
No.
He has the Richard Moore public relations firm, and if you are a member of AFTRA, you must get the magazine Standby.
No, I have an honorary thrill from AFTRA.
Well, if you get it, he's the editor, and he writes an article every year.
The last thing that Dick and I did together was a picture for Saul Wurzel called Dangerous Years, the first picture Marilyn Monroe was ever in.
I never knew he was in a picture with Marilyn Monroe.
Well, I starred in the picture, and it was about juvenile delinquency. And Fox had just gotten her, and they had a little scene where she was a waitress, and she had about five lines, Doug. Bless her. And it took 3 days to shoot the five lines, and we only had a 22-day schedule.
But they would spend that much of that time on her?
Yes, indeed. They sure did.
Paid off, didn't it? Mm-hmm. What was she like then?
Scared.
I think she was scared right to the end.
Oh, yes. It was too much for her. The great Hollywood image, you know, the Harlow image, as it were. And we need it out here. We don't have it today. We have to have somebody like that. And this is what we don't have today. And she just didn't have the, excuse me, the background and the talent. This was not a born talent. This was a made talent. And this is completely different. Because they can't do it. They can take a soda jerker and make him a leading man. Because it's not hard. I did it with Chuck Connick.
Were you responsible for that?
Yes. I've always been interested in baseball, and I was in the Army with Chuck. I used to teach at West Point, and he was with Tank Corps up there. And when he got out of the service, he went to Montreal, and he came out here to L.A., and I had a business going at the time. I always had something going. And he wrote me and said, you need an apartment, you needed furniture, whatever. And I'll take care of him. And he played first base with the Angels. And one night he called me and said they needed a real tall gentleman for a Joan Crawford picture. Would I help him? And I spent 4 days and four nights, literally, just coaching him. And this was, he became a mimic because this is how you're going to read it. And he got the part.
Still see him?
No. I saw him once, and I said, when he was doing that Western, I said, say, Chuck, yeah, maybe I could get into one of these things. Oh, well, you have to see the producer. You can't do it. They forget. Well, it's not the end of that.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit later the story that I know about Chuck Connors when I was a press agent.
Yeah.
But tell what are some of the roles or the role that you really wanted and you didn't get? Everybody has one.
To think back, I don't know, because every role that I've wanted and wanted to get badly, I've gotten my Tom Brown School Days, mm-hmm. which was an English picture. And I wanted it very badly, and what I did was I went out and made a record of Sherlock Holmes and played both parts and sent the record to Tom and Baker. And they said, who was that? And my agent told them who it was. They said, oh, no, it couldn't be. Well, my God, I played Englishman on Let's Pretend so many times it would make your head swim, you know. And I got the part. Until the headmaster at Rugby said if one of the dead-end kids plays the heavy, I played Flashman in it, we won't let the picture be shown in England. But it was shown, and it played at Music Hall in New York for 9 weeks.
Was Bobby Benson a Chicago show when it began?
No, it was in New York. It was a Buffalo show to begin with, and it played one season in Buffalo. Then it moved to New York.
Buffalo? I didn't know that anything came from that.
Yeah, this Hecker, who are H.O. Oates. Their main office is in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Then moved to New York. But I was doing Skippy at the time, on record, for everything west of Chicago. And then I got Bobby Benson.
That was on record then?
Everything west of Chicago.
What kind of record did they have?
Big 33 and a third waxes, like big, large things. And we'd make two in the morning.
This would be what, the early 30s?
Oh, gosh, yes, very early 30s. Uh-huh. For World Broadcasting System, which is Ziv now.
That is Ziv? I didn't know
Ziv
that.
Bought them out.
Gee, you're telling me all kinds of things.
Well, I can go way back.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed I can.
Is your family theatrical?
Well, no, my father couldn't sing in a bucket. He was a lawyer. And also, he never practiced law, by the way. He had his master's and so on. He was vice president of one of the largest independent packers in the East. Maybe you've heard of him, Truns.
Yes.
He was a big man.
Meat packer.
That's right.
Yes. T-R-U-N-Z.
He'd make the finest ham in the world. And he didn't have any talent, as far as, you know, theatrical talent is concerned. My sister, she started when she was 4. And my mother was a frustrated dancer and singer. I think it came from her side of the family. But she was never a stage mother. She didn't push us. We just went on our own.
What is your sister doing now?
She's doing commercials, quite a few commercials.
Out here? Because people ask me about her.
Yes, out here.
I knew what you were doing, you know, and I tell them, but I didn't know about your sister.
No, there's a Joy commercial that she's on now. And it seemed to pay off quite handsomely. I'm one of the reactionaries there. I won't do a commercial. I wasn't trained to be a commercial actor. I'm an actor.
And you really won't do one?
Oh, no. Uh-uh. I'm sorry. The money is great. But I don't know if we can. Can you use the word bastardized?
Oh, yes. We're bastard, yes.
Yes,
sure.
We've bastardized our business enough, as it were. And I feel that with the training I've had, I don't want to not lower myself. I just don't think there's any art there.
You must be recognized a lot because you kept that wonderful thick head of hair, which I'm very jealous.
Not in this town.
You're not recognized here?
Not too much in this town, no. The minute I get out of L.A., yes. All through Europe.
You think maybe they recognize you and they're just blasé?
No, most of the time I get recognized account of my voice, not account of my looks.
I wouldn't a minute, of course, but I'm very voice conscious.
Mm.
Now, you must tell them what you're doing now, because I really got a turn when you told me that.
Well, when we found out my wife had MS, and musculosclerosis, and this is a disease that's a demyelinating disease, and I won't go into it too technically. But it takes 10 years of incubation before they'll actually say you have MS. And when this happened, I got very interested in medicine. And I do come from a medical family on my father's side. There are three doctors in his family. I decided I was going to learn everything I could about it. So I went into nursing. And I found out that this is something that fills a great void for me. So I studied, and I now do nothing but private duty nursing. And it fills a tremendous void for me. And I can get as much work as I want. And it's very remunerative. Because depending upon the case, it depends upon how much money you make. For instance, I work in three categories. I'm a geriatric nurse because there aren't too many people who want to work with the old people. And this is quite a field. And then I work with criticals and we do the best we can with them. I work with alcoholics and overdoses as far as kids are concerned on barbiturates and narcotics. And those are my four fields. And we don't have enough male personnel as far as nursing is concerned, so you can be as busy as you want. And right now I'm on a case that, my gosh, I didn't think the man had ever pulled through. And the last 2 days, he's off the oxygen, he's sitting up in a chair, and he's getting mean, so that means he's getting well. And we do have to use the bird on him. It's an automatic breather. But I think he's going to make it. And this is the thing that when you see that you have done something to help a life, there's a certain feeling of it's, well, actually it's rewarding. It's a great reward. And I come home at night and I feel like, I've done something to help humanity.
I was in the hospital this spring for a while, too long it seems to me, and when I left the doctor said I might need a nurse for a few days anyway. I was trying to think of what my reaction would be if Billy Halpert showed up as my nurse. Well, what do people say when you walk in?
Well, most of them are sick, you see, so they
don't notice?
Sick. They don't notice. Sometimes I will be recognized, but when I go on a case, the people are so ill, the first thing they don't realize I'm a nurse, you see, because I'm in white, and they used to call me doctor.
Yeah, but Olivia de Havilland, you'd understand it, because you see her in a nurse's uniform.
I will get recognized once in a while, but the answer I have for them is, why aren't you in pictures? Why aren't you working in pictures? And I said, well, I'd still work in pictures, but this is my avocation. This is something I like to do, and I'll be damned if I'm going to sit and wait and for my agent to call me or wait between phone calls. It's too frustrating. See, a year ago, last March, I had two coronaries on the same day. Not one, two. And they gave me up. I had the last rites twice. And I beat it. But I was in the hospital for 6 months. This has given me more of an impetus now to help, because I was helped. And it's not only a rewarding profession, there are, some of the laughs you get are just amazing. People, situations that happen, problems with doctors, problems with nurses, with your med nurses, getting what you need to save a patient. And then, of course, when they expire, it kind of hurts. It doesn't hurt while you're on the job, but about 3 hours afterwards, then you feel it. But while you're working on them, it doesn't mean anything.
Let me ask you one thing, and I won't go back again to the dead-end kids, but it was something I asked both Hans and Leo, and they never really gave me satisfactory answers. Why did Sidney Lumet not go to Hollywood after he did the play on Broadway?
To be very honest with you, I don't know. Because the only recollection I have of Sidney is when he was one of the little kids who came in on the second act and threw stones at us. And that's it. And I didn't even know if he had any talent then, but he certainly has come to the fore as far as the director's concerned. He is a little way out. I'm an old-fashioned actor, as it were. I believe in two things. Because radio taught me the basic elements of acting, which are your heart and your mind. You don't have anything in radio except that. You don't have your eyes. You don't have your hands. You can't pick your nose. You've got to do it with your brain, your voice, and your heart. And everything else will come naturally. Your hand movements will come naturally. If you're honest, it'll come through in your eyes. And you cannot teach this. This comes naturally. Whereas today, with the Strasbourg school, as it were, of method acting, there is no such thing as method. Either you do it honestly, you go out and do your homework. By homework, I mean if I'm going to play a plumber, I'll go out with a plumber for a couple of weeks. The same thing I did in Dead End. I didn't know from the East Side. I was brought up in Long Island. So I went over to the East Side and watched these kids. And that's how I built my character. By watching.
Have you ever discussed this philosophy you have on acting with Gabe Dell? Because he's a member of Actors Studio.
I know, but Gabe and I, we agree, and then we don't agree. But we come to a mutual understanding. And I say, all right, fine, you can call it method if you will. But I call it honesty. And how much homework are you doing? You see? But Gabe has become, in one sense of the word, what he has to, in summertime, for instance, he becomes a hack actor. In 3 days, he gets up in it, he plays it, and, do your 2 weeks, grab your money, and run. Because you have to make a living. And that's what it's come to. As far as art is concerned today, there's no art today. It's all technical. You don't have the chance. In TV, for instance, how much chance do you have to develop a character? You don't. So ultimately, Jimmy Cagney once told me, he said, Bill, get two bags, one on each side. Now take all the tricks and put them in the bags. Use them only when you have to. But they're there if you need them. And this to me is something like, fine, you may need them once in a while. But if you're honest and you have an honest approach, and you have searched the character you're playing psychologically, physically, what the character means to the rest of the cast, to the story, you can't miss. And we don't have any directors today. And I got in a lot of trouble account of that.
What if Billy Halep at age 6 had not gone on to radio and then on to movies? What do you think you'd be doing? Any idea?
I think I'd have
been. You would have been?
Yeah.
Are you ever sorry?
No. How can I be sorry for yesterday? It's gone.
What if you don't have children, I take it?
No.
If you had, and he said he wanted to be an actor.
The first thing I'd do is I'd make sure he gets that, get a complete education. And after, if he wanted to, he could go into drama, go into the dramatic arts in college, in high school, and on into college. And afterwards, if he wanted it badly enough, I would say yes, but I won't help you. Because I've seen too much of it, and what happens to the child actor. Like myself, I've had stardom 3 times now. I've had it in radio, I've had it in the theater, I've had it in pictures. And we had no expression. Line of steps going up with velvet, so you don't hurt your fanny coming down. And I think I hit a couple of rungs that I didn't line. And to start to come back up again at my age is quite a chore, because they still think of me as a 16-year-old actor, you see. And I'm not. And what with the new regime in, where they I go out on an interview and they'll say, "Well, Mr. Hallop, what have you done?" And I kind of, the ego comes up, you know, I lose the humility. And one story at Fox, when I got out of the service, they asked me what I had done. I'd just been out of the service 6 weeks. And I looked at the casting director and I said, "I fought a war for you for 4 years, you so-and-so." And I walked out. Didn't work at Fox for 5 years.
WBAI, New York.
Until I learned that I better tell them what I've done, and most of them don't remember it anyhow because they're too young.
Well, in some cases, that would work to your advantage, wouldn't it? If they haven't in their mind, this is Billy Hallop, the dead-end kid?
No, because, they've seen the reruns. And this is what they see. They don't see me as a mature individual. They see me as a child actor. So ultimately, what I've tried to do is I've wanted to go into directing. And that's a tough nut to crack. Now, you went to England on a deal to direct over there, but it didn't work out. And so ultimately, I've resigned myself to the fact if the part comes up and I'm at the right place at the right time, fine. Until then, it's not going to bother me. I've got my nursing, and this is certainly, shall I say, puts the bread on the table, and I enjoy it. I can't say I enjoy it more than acting, because this is where I was brought up, and this is my this is the staff of life for me.
You remember Hollywood, you know, in the old days as we were talking, and you still make the rounds now as an actor. Has it changed drastically, the attitudes?
Well, completely. Well, first of all, you've got a new element. Even in the old days, and I speak of the old days, with the Betty Davises and the Joan Crawfords and so on, we had a certain rapport, a certain regimentation, as it were. And no matter how big you were, once in a while, sure, the temper tantrums. But if you had a call for 9 o'clock, you were there at 9:15, and you knew your lines, and you knew what to do, and every actor helped each other. Today, with the younger element, and I will not mention names, there is no discipline. Discipline's out the window. And you take some of the tried and true actors, and they come in, and it hurts us, because we're used to discipline. And this is part of acting. You must have discipline. And you don't have it. This routine of going out for lunch, and lunch is called a crowd, and you come back on a set of 1, you come back at 3. There's no respect for the fellow actor. All of a sudden, you're a star, and you can do as you do in your face. Well, this didn't work in the old days. I don't care who you were. You adhered to the policy, and you worked together, and you gave your all. And it was an art. And we approached it as an art.
This has been most interesting, and I want to tell the listeners, because it's radio, not TV, how well you look. I think a lot of people will be pleased to hear that. As I said before, you kept your hair and you kept your figure, and you really look great.
Well, I gotta keep my figure, because if I don't...
Well, I wish I had time while I was in Pacific Palisades. I'd drop in on a couple of your neighbors. Do you ever see Billy Dove or Virginia Bruce? They live up here.
Virginia Bruce, yes. Yeah.
How's she look?
She's She looks pretty well, you know. She's not as young as she used to be. She still cavorts around in that long mink coat. Comes Christmas time. And she still has that lovely voice.
Yeah, I remember her so well.
She was quite ill for some time, you know. And she's getting along beautiful.
She was living in Turkey for a while.
She was married to a Turk.
Young Turk, yes.
Yeah. They're divorced now, of course. But if I'm not mistaken, they see each other quite often.
Yeah, they were married once, and then they were divorced because he was in the Turkish army, and they couldn't have a commission if he was married to a foreigner. Mm-hmm. And she divorced him, lived with his family over there, and then remarried him, I believe.
She's a charming woman. She's charming. And I would love to see her back in the industry. There are many parts she could play.
She did a picture with Kim Novak about 7 or 8 years ago. No comment. Billy Halper, it's been a lot of fun. And I hope we see you again, maybe on the screen. You did a Dick Van Dyke picture, I know, about a year ago.
Yeah, I was golden. I haven't done anything this year, believe me or not. Why, I don't know. Either my agent's a Secret Service man, or I keep turning things down because if they don't want to pay my salary. And this is a horrible town for that, because if you lower your salary and they put that DNQ at the top of the contract, that's the greatest advertisement for he got a salary cut and now he can buy them cheaper. And we've kind of sold ourselves out as actors anyhow. And I'll be darned if I'm going to take a cut. I'd rather do 3 shows a year at my salary than do 12.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you,
sir. Hope you get a raise and nothing else.
Well, I'm happy, and it's looking for
good. Indeed it is. Billy Halper was my guest today.